to the fourth case, NLA et al. Versus Holder. Mr. Adler?
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
May it please the Court, Jason Adler on behalf of petitioners. This asylum case has come to this Court due in large part to an error in defining and applying the standard for persecution. The government suggests that persecution entails punishment or the infliction of harm. Last year, however, in Sunajkava v. Holder, this Court explained that persecution does not merely consist of significant physical force, it also includes non-physical harm of equal gravity. A credible threat to inflict grave physical harm, for example, is enough. This is a case about such a threat. The lead petitioner, who I'll refer to as NLA, has been the target of a concrete and imminent threat in her home country of Colombia. The immigration judge denied her asylum application, finding NLA credible, but noting that unfulfilled threats generally do not constitute persecution. On appeal, the board similarly held that unfulfilled threats are generally insufficient to establish past persecution.
Could I just ask you this? Are the petitioners making any claim that their political ideology had anything to do with their resistance to paying a revolutionary tax to the FARC?
Yes, Your Honor. And there's expert testimony to support that.
And exactly what is the political ideology?
That they oppose the FARC's behaviors and the FARC's practice of taxing landowners. Now, the decision of the board flies in the face of this court's precedent holding that a credible threat to inflict grave physical harm qualifies as persecution. Now, the government suggests that this court should not reverse the board's decision unless the record compels a contrary conclusion. This view grossly distorts the standard of review applicable in this case. First, this court examines questions of law de novo. And second, while this court respects factual determinations by the board supported by substantial evidence, it does not let lie decisions like this one fraught with unreasoned findings and logical gaps. The question, then, is whether the board's decision in this case follows logically from the testimony presented. For several reasons, it does not. In each of the key areas of its decision, the board draws conclusions contrary to this court's precedent and to logic. To begin with, the board incorrectly found that NLA did not establish past persecution. The board incorrectly labeled NLA's claim as a derivative claim. But NLA's claim for asylum is not dependent on finding persecution against members of her family. Rather, petitioners present her family members' circumstances to establish as credible the threats against NLA's own life.
What do you see as the threat that occurred here? What is the evidence of that threat?
The threat is the when petitioner's father was kidnapped. Her father was asked and detained and asked whether whether he had children. He revealed that petitioner was his child. Who held title to the land, and he revealed that petitioner did indeed hold title to the land. Mm-hmm. The threat then was that the FARC followed up by asking that, or by suggesting that the lives of his children would be at risk unless he paid the tax to them.
Unless he paid the taxes?
Okay. Yes, unless
and
the family paid the taxes.
The petitioner testified about that?
Yes.
And that's the evidence? Her
yes.
own testimony?
Yes, the evidence is her own testimony as well as her expert testimony, which the expert testified that if NLA was to return to Colombia, mm-hmm. she would be in mortal danger.
Does the record reflect the status of the father today?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Do we know the status of the father today?
Oh, the status of the father. I'm not sure if that's reflected in the record.
We do have affidavits speaking to the sibling, though.
Right, her sister.
Isn't there some indication that the father mm-hmm. had passed away and that the sisters are now the owners of this property?
Yes. I'm sorry. I should clarify. The father has passed away, and so the sisters now have title to the land.
But yet they've abandoned the property.
Exactly.
And that abandonment, how do you see that affecting our decision?
Sure. The fact that they no longer sit with the land, I don't think diminishes in any respect the extent to which they've suffered persecution and have well-founded fear of persecution. I think because, you know, they still own the land, and they fled the land in part because of the threat that they faced.
Does the petitioner seek to go back to the land?
No.
It just wants the ability to dispose of it?
No, the petitioner seeks asylum.
Well, I appreciate that.
Sure.
But is it because she has no belief that she can safely return to the land or the country?
It's that she, both, I would say. She doesn't believe she can safely return to the land. But if she returns to the country, at the very least, she would be forced into hiding, as her sister has been.
Is your position that the sibling is in hiding because of the name change?
The name change, among other things. She's changed her name. She changes her phone number. She moved to a different city. The pharmacy she works at is held under a third party. They move homes every 6 months. There are several factors that show that the and essentially this her sister is living as a fugitive in Colombia.
Do you believe that working at this pharmacy could somehow reveal her identity?
I believe that because of the precautions she's taken, that helps to shield her identity. I think it's certainly possible that the FARC, I mean, the FARC has a pretty widespread intelligence network, could still discover her identity.
But that was something the Immigration Board relied on, the fact that she is publicly working at this pharmacy.
Sure. And I think, though, the difference is that she's really not publicly working at the pharmacy. She's, you know, working under a different name, different phone number. He constantly moves. You know, she's living in hiding. Now, the board also suggested, so NLA showed past persecution, and that demonstrates a well-founded fear of future persecution. That said, NLA independently demonstrated a well-founded fear of future persecution. To show a well-founded fear of future persecution, all that's required is a reasonable possibility of persecution, which is a 10% chance of persecution. Now, I think there are two key pieces of evidence that support this claim of well-founded fear of future persecution. First, it's that neighbors of NLA have seen individuals that they believe to be members of the FARC looking for the family at their farm. Second, there's expert testimony from Dr. John Green, the Colombia country specialist, that NLA would be in mortal danger if she returned to Colombia. Now, I'd like to, at this point, reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Adler. Mr. Zanfondon, you know.
Good morning.
May
it please the Court. Richard Zanfondon for the respondent. Just to quickly answer a couple of questions, and then I'll get to some of the prepared remarks. Your Honor, to your question about political opinion, there was no – this case law – this Court's case law is very clear that it is the opinion of the victim, not the persecutor, regarding a political opinion. And there was no evidence adduced at trial before the immigration judge regarding any political beliefs that they exhorted or held themselves out to hold. And again, I think Your Honor cleared it up, but both parents have passed away. They passed away of natural causes. The land automatically reverted to the two sisters, one of whom is still in Colombia.
And speaking of the one that's still in Colombia, is it really the government's position that someone who leaves their home, moves 7 hours away, changes jobs, changes their names, changes phone numbers every several months, moves every several months, is not living in hiding simply because they can once in a while walk out of their house, attend school, and work using assumed identities? Is that really our government's position?
Your Honor, the government's position is that the evidence here doesn't suggest that petitioner's sister had a reason to do so. There was no evidence suggested at trial or before the board that the FARC has sought her out or that she has any reason to take these steps. It does go a long way to prove her subjective fear. Does petitioner's sister have a subjective fear of harm? Yes, she does. But there's been nothing to suggest that she's been pursued by the FARC, that the FARC has made inquiries after her. Now, what by relying on – there's two prongs, of course, for objectively reasonable fear. One is to, for proof of well-founded fear. One is a subjective fear, and the next is objective fear. You can't build up one in order to meet the other.
Mm-hmm. Well, isn't it objective that their uncle was killed? That's a fact, right?
It is.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
And it's also objective that their father was kidnapped and that the FARC kidnapped the father.
That's correct, Your Honor, but...
It's also objective that the FARC asked who owns the land and indicated that if these tariffs were not paid by the landowners, meaning the two sisters, harm would befall them. That's objective.
That's all objective evidence, Your Honor, but the question is objective evidence of a well-founded fear. And let me turn to each point in order. The uncle's killing, the petitioners themselves all stated that life continued as normal after the uncle's killing. There was no indication that there was anything in order to reach them.
Isn't that a conclusion that life continues? First of all, life doesn't continue as normal after somebody's uncle is killed. That's a conclusion, okay? But the next thing that happens is the brother of that person is kidnapped. Do you consider that life as normal?
Well, Your Honor, the family in Bogota stated that they continue their life as normal. And again, they're the ones who are applying for asylum.
They continue to live. I think what's in the record is we had to go on with our lives. The spin on that is life continued as normal. Two different things.
Well, but again, this is the claim of these petitioners here, and one can't step into the shoes of the other, as this Court's made clear. The petitioner's kidnapping, the petitioner's father's kidnapping, there was nothing in the record, again, initially, to state that we want to reach these folks in Bogota, so let's kidnap the petitioner's father. There was nothing to suggest that was what was going on when they did that. It was entirely reasonable. Again, it doesn't have to be that...
Only if you wear blinders is there nothing. Only if you are so set on keeping these people in the situation that they find themselves in. Could a statement like that be made? Forgive me, Mr. Zarin.
Your Honor, the petitioners had their father kidnapped, but there was nothing adduced at trial to suggest that that was done to reach them. The record has...
No, the kidnapping was not done to reach them, but when he was kidnapped, they interrogated him and asked who owns the property, and a threat was made against the daughters. Was it not? Yes.
That's
or
correct.
No?
And through an intermediary.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Do you believe that was a credible threat?
As in, did they mean to say that we threatened?
Was that a credible threat? When the FARC told the father, we will harm your daughters if these payments are not made, was that a credible threat?
I think it was believable on the part of petitioners to believe that they
were... Okay. And petitioner testified about that, and she was found credible by the ALJ, right?
Yes.
So what do we need? Do we need an actual FARC person to then go to the petitioner and repeat the threat in order for it to be credible? Is that what needs to be made?
No, Your Honor, but to meet a past persecution standard, this Court has held repeatedly that threats alone do not suffice.
But that's not what we have here. We have actual happenings here. We have murders of uncles, kidnapped fathers, sisters living in hiding, land that has been abandoned. I tell you, you're the messenger. You're the messenger. And you're doing the best job you can. But I have rarely seen a worse case than this.
Your Honor, I think there's been numerous cases that have had much more levels of persecution. The Hernandez-Bena case involved a person who was threatened to his face by members of the FARC. He then moves, receives a phone call, and says, your death sentence is signed. But then nothing else occurs after those threats. Unfulfilled threats, this Court has held, do not. And in this case, the killing of the uncle and the kidnapping of the father, only then do the threats occur against petitioners in this case.
Unfulfilled because the FARC hasn't been able to find one family and because the other family lives in what one of your judges on this panel believes is hiding.
Well, Your Honor, again, that's petitioner's sister has made the choice to change jobs, but there was nothing suggested by the evidence that FARC was seeking her out. And again, the suggestion that individuals are searching her out is quite a stretch, because there's been no evidence. There was evidence that suspicious persons, that was the sum and thrust of what
Well, what you've got is an unkidnapped living family. That's what you've got. I don't know what, you know, the FARC is up to.
What do you make of the fact that these two sisters abandoned this property? Don't you think that supports a well-founded fear?
Your Honor, it supports that they have a subjective fear. There's a two-pronged that has to both be met. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is that the board looked at the country report evidence and said the FARC is in strategic retreat, its leaders are being killed, they've had people report to the police to seek out and challenge against the FARC, the FARC is being engaged in, the FARC is stronger to the south, they move 7 hours north.
That same report suggested, I'm glad you conceded that the FARC was stronger to the south. That same report admitted that FARC controls one-third of the country. Is that evidence that they're not, that they're going out of business having one-third? If a street gang controlled one-third of the streets of Chicago, I would say that's an abject failure on the part of the police department.
But their power is also concentrated to the south, and they've moved 7 hours to the north.
7 hours, gosh. And 7 hours here to where? To Minneapolis?
So the question is, again, in terms of the actual threats that none of them received directly, and the country report evidence regarding well-founded fear, the point is there an objective basis for it?
And are you familiar with Judge Easterbrook's opinion in Chitté?
With regard to the standing order?
It was a case involving Guatemala. There was no direct threat. 169 F3rd 1079. Are you familiar with that case?
Not offhand, Your Honor, no.
Okay. But would you concede that, well, if you're not familiar with it, what if I told you that in that case Judge Easterbrook found there was a legitimate threat even though it was never directly communicated to the petitioner?
Your Honor, and that's because these rulings are on a case-by-case basis. And the point of that this Court has repeatedly held is that threats, for threats alone to suffice, they have to be sufficiently imminent and menacing. In this case, the uncle's killing took place. Nothing happened to petitioners. Their father was kidnapped. Then they receive the threats. They move away.
Right.
Nothing else happened after that. Petitioners have not been contacted. Petitioners have not received any word that they've been sought out. Petitioners have not received any indication that individuals were looking for them who were from the FARC.
We have one petitioner that fled the country, is in the United States, right?
And I'm using petitioner's sister as a control.
Okay. The other one goes to a different city, changes names, is moving around, and she has not been contacted. And somehow they're supposed to go to every pharmacy and find her. But she is working under an assumed name.
Which, again, their contention is that the FARC is this overreaching power that is able to seek them out. It's entirely permissible for the agency to rule that the FARC was not interested in them. That's the standard of review, is whether every reasonable fact finder would have concluded differently from the board. And I see my time is up.
Are you familiar with the latest in-country report?
The 2009? Again, they continually paint mixed pictures, Your Honor, yes. And
yeah, that's I just think that's a tough hurdle for you because it seems to suggest that in the 2009 report that FARC is still seeking revenue by the kidnappings and the like. I mean, it paints with a broad brush, obviously, but it does put a real chill, it would seem to me, in somebody in this setting.
Well, and the thrust of the report also, though, makes clear the government's trying to engage them and is killing leaders.
No question.
So the question is, of course, back to the standard of review, whether or not a fact finder could conclude that if they'd taken steps to move to the north and had not been required by FARC to actually change her name, then a reasonable fact finder concluded there was not an objectively reasonable fear of harm. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Adler?
Thank
Thank you, Your Honors. I have three quick points. First, generally, this court's precedent indicates that a threat is sufficient to qualify as persecution. Sinashkova v. Holder, a case from 2011, indicates that. And the government continually cites Hernandez-Buena as a case illustrating that a threat is insufficient. But in that case, it should be pointed out that the asylum applicant spent 7 months in her home in his home country after the threat was delivered. Spent 7 months not in hiding, in public view, and nothing happened to the applicant after that. So I think the Hernandez-Buena is distinguishable on that ground. Second, the government attacks the credibility of the threat. Now, Sinashkova again says that.
How does the government attack the credibility of the threat?
By saying
the likelihood of the threat. Where have they challenged the credibility?
By arguing that the threat is only believable to petitioner and that the circumstances do not show that the threat is credible. And to the contrary, the circumstances show that the threat is credible. The uncle's murder, the father's kidnapping. The reason that those facts were pointed out in this brief is to show that this threat on petitioner's life is credible. And for the same exact reasons, this threat is immediate and menacing. The surrounding circumstances of this threat show that this is a serious threat to petitioner's life. The fact that she has not been directly contacted and that her sister has not been directly contacted is irrelevant. The fact that they haven't been directly contacted is because her sister went into hiding and she fled the country.
Now, if we were to rule in your favor, what do you think would be the viable social group? Is it the test adopted by the ALJ that was rejected by the appeals group, or what other group would you suggest?
Well, I think that the group that the board, that the IJ proposed is a viable group, and I think that it was wrong for the board to sua sponte walk back that decision. Now, I think that that group is viable for several reasons. It's sufficiently narrow. And to the extent that it's defined by the harm, that's an argument of the government's, it's okay for a group to be defined by some event that happens to its group members that for that reason puts them in that group and puts them in the view of persecution. So my answer then is the immigration judge's social group, I think, is sufficient. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.